This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Does. Join me, Joyce Jones, as I have a discussion with Queen Mother Williams and raise funds to preserve this listener-supported experiment. That's Monday, May 18th at 9 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Gather round me, you Americans, if you believe in right and wrong. The newspapers have ignored this, I'll tell it in a song. The papers and the TV never told a story straight. So listen now, I will to you the honest facts relate. Let me take you to a corner of this world that we call free. It's Monroe, North Carolina, where the Klan rules by decree. Now maybe you thought the Klan was dead and buried long ago. Well, in August 1961, you should have been in old Monroe. It's a town of about 10,000, it could be a pretty place. But there's uncertainty and fear to be seen on many a face. A railroad slices through Monroe, it's not one town but two towns. On the right, Monroe is white, and on the left is Newtown. 18 freedom riders came in August 61 at the call of young Rob Williams to see what could be done. Robert Williams was a leader, a giant of a man. He said, let's protect our families from the violence of the Klan. Well, the Klansmen, they got busy. They came from everywhere, all armed with guns and pistols, and Chief Mooney didn't care. They staged a bloody riot, and the deck was surely stacked, 'cause the only ones arrested were the ones who were attacked. Now listen for the frame-up. Did the Klan lay a plan to trap Williams and his friends and make him flee the land? A couple by name of Stiegel were driving in a car. They drove right into Newtown. That was a bit too far. For Negroes live in Newtown, and on that fatal day, they'd set their lines of self-defense against the KKK. The Stiegels, they were frightened. They're stopped at Williams' door, and Robert Williams told the crowd to let the Stiegels go. He said, come on inside my house, you'll get hurt if you stay here. And Williams led the Stiegels inside his own house there. And though this man had saved them, police got on his trail. Nothing less than a kidnap charge, 20 years to life in jail. And then the mighty FBI joined in to help the Klan, with vicious posters tacked up in post offices through the land, saying Rob was armed and dangerous and schizophrenic too, as though to shoot him down on sight would be the safest thing to do. But Rob escaped to Canada and then to Mexico, and now he stays in Cuba where the FBI can't go. And now a make-believe trial comes in 1962, and we are wondering if in Monroe that justice can come through. Perhaps when it gets to the Supreme Court, they'll get a better shake. But it's in the hearts of you and me the decision must be made. For we are all as guilty till we make that day to come, when Robert Williams can return to his Union County home. So listen, Mr. President, and listen, Brother Bob. If you defend the free world, here is a little job. If you don't believe the words I say, go see it for yourself. Go down and visit old Monroe, but be careful of your health. There's lots of good people in Monroe, but they are scared to say, Go down to old Monroe, Bob, tell them this is the USA. They say the German people the crimes of Hitler never knew. Well, let American people see what fascists here can do. For we've had enough of murder, we've had enough of lies, and the Ku Klux Klan in old Monroe is due to be surprised. For in Washington and round the world we're being asked today, is Monroe, North Carolina, in the good old USA? Monroe, Monroe, I hear those voices say, is Monroe, North Carolina, in the good old USA?
You're tuned to WBAI, the station that tells our story and tells it like it is. This is Mabel Williams, widow of Robert F. Williams, Negroes with Guns, and you're listening to WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM.
And I mean every word of it.
The second of these songs, named Trouble, is called by its composer, Joshua White, a censored song. Just as in slavery days, Go Down Moses was the forbidden song, truly verboten, so in the present there is a strong subterranean current of song coming out of the chain gangs, the convict farms, the forbidden places. Behind the turned back of the captain, the straw boss, the walking boss, the man clothed in a little, brief, but terrible authority, the strong voice breaks out, sometimes in irony, sometimes in protest, sometimes in wrath. The song Trouble, sung by Joshua White and the Golden Gate Quartet.
Mm-hmm. Lord, I've always been in trouble, 'cause I'm a black-skinned man. Well, they said I hit a white man and they locked me in the can. Well, they took me to the stockade, wouldn't give me no trial. And the judge, he said, you black boy, 40 years on the hard rock pile. Lord, I'm trouble, trouble, sure won't make me stay. Lord, I'm trouble, trouble, jailbreak due someday. Well, I'm wearing coal iron shackles from my head down to my knees. And that mean old keeper, Lord, he's all time kicking me. Well, I went up to the walker and the head boss too, and I said, please, all you big white folk, won't you see what you can do? Well, the sheriff winked at the leaseman, says, I won't forget you know how. You better come back and see me again, boy, about 40 years from now. Lord, I went back to the walker. He looked at me and said, buddy, don't you worry about 40, 'cause in 5 years you'll be dead. Lord, I'm trouble, trouble, makes me weep and moan. Lord, I'm trouble, trouble, since the day I was born. Lord, I'm trouble, trouble, sure won't make me stay. Lord, I'm trouble, trouble, jailbreak due someday.
Why is this considered legal in the United States? Why do these Minutemen say that they are mobilizing to fight communism or a possible invasion by the communists? Now, wouldn't an American be naive indeed to believe that if the United States Marine Corps couldn't stop the communists, how in the hell can a few old women in tennis shoes and John Birch Society people and Minutemen stop them? No, no. Anyone who can think logically can see that these Minutemen, these fascists, racists, are being armed and they are mobilizing for a pogrom against Afro-Americans. They are going to become a vanguard of fascist elements that will be turned loose on Afro-Americans who get out of line. And to get out of line means Afro-Americans who petition militantly for their constitutional rights, for their human rights. That these will be the people who will do the dirty work. These will be the people who will man the furnaces, the gas furnaces, like the Jewish people experienced in Nazi Germany. This is to be done outside the jurisdiction of the authority of the United States Army, because the United States Army and armed services are integrated. These armed forces are integrated. This fascist Minuteman organization is not integrated. So it will be like the French army in Algeria. They will look the other way. The armed services of the United States, the police officials, the Justice Department will look the other way and will say that we can't catch these people. We're sorry. We've done everything we can do to prevent violence against the Negro. So these John Birchers, I guess they have pure 100% all-American weapons. And so the papers can't find any cause to denounce their activity or to denounce the fact that they have these weapons even mortars and machine guns. But now, in a little cave in Monroe, North Carolina, where Negroes gallantly, who were outnumbered and outgunned, gallantly rose to the defense of their homes and their persons, that these Negroes were criticized for defending themselves because they say that these Negroes defended themselves with communist weapons or with weapons that had communist insignias. Perhaps they would prefer to have seen us die at the hands of racists who used weapons with only Nazi and with only the U.S. Army insignia. But
listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. My name's Joyce Jones, and this is Sugar in My Bowl. And during this fund and membership generating special, we're going to focus on Robert F. Williams and the work that Robert F. Williams and Mrs. Mabel Williams had done, Queen Mother Williams, as a matter of fact. And what we're going to be offering, just so you know, that snippet that we heard a moment ago is from a 4-CD set from the Pacifica Archives, because WBAI used to air Radio Free Dixie, WBAI and KPFA, as a matter of fact, used to air bootleg copies of Radio Free Dixie. And so we have, for a pledge of $125, 4 CDs that I was listening to them, all of them, today. And that's it's just history. You know, if you're not familiar with the work of Robert F. Williams and Mabel Williams, you will learn from these 4 CDs for certain. A man named Mark Schleffer, S-C-H-L-I-E-L-E-I-F-E-R, S-C-H-E-I-F-E-R, Mark Schleffer, interviewed Robert Williams. And there's that's for the, that's on the first 2 CDs. And on the third one, Mark Schleffer introduces Robert F. Williams while he gives a presentation. On the first CD, they talk about, on the first 2 CDs, they talk about moving to Cuba. And, oh goodness. And just escaping the racism in the United States of America. And on the other 2 CDs, which, actually, those 2 CDs were featured on KPFA. And the next two CDs with the presentation was broadcast on WBAI in May 1962. And on the line, without further ado, we have Queen Mother Mabel Williams. Good evening, Queen Mother Williams.
Good evening. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you.
Oh, it's so good to hear you. And it was good to meet you. And actually, perhaps I should turn this down just a little more so I can hear you. I guess I should also let people know that in the background I'm playing Crescent from the John Coltrane Quartet. That's McCoy Tyner on piano, Jimmy Garrison on bass, and Elvin Jones on drums. And before that we heard, let's see, I hope I've got the order together, Trouble, yes, by Joshua White and the Golden Gate Quartet. And before that we heard, let's see, Nina Simone, if I'm not mistaken. If I didn't get, I should write this down as I'm doing this to keep myself in order. But Old Jim Crow. Wait, hold on for a second. Someone's got bad timing. Old Jim Crow. And I got this from Nina Simone in concert. And that was recorded in 1964 in New York. Who do we have here on piano? Rudy Stevenson. LaSalle Atkinson on bass. Bobby Hamilton on drums. And, let's see. Before that, we heard... Let's see. Ah, Pete Seeger. No. Yeah. Pete Seeger. And he did the Ballad of Old Monroe, which was the story about what happened in Monroe. Well, Queen Mother Williams, you want to tell me about, talk about the song that Pete Seeger wrote?
Yes. He wrote that song after being informed about what was going on in Monroe in our struggle for human rights and for civil rights. And we were very happy to get it and to play it on Radio Free Dixie on our radio program. He was a very famous, as you know, folk singer, and we were just delighted that he took the time to write about Monroe and our struggle and to record that ballad for us.
Yeah, that was, and it just made it clear exactly what was going on. I've got a question for you. How did you and Robert? Well, I have several questions for you, but how did you and Robert F. Williams meet?
How did we meet?
Yes.
Oh wow.
Yes.
Robert had just come home on furlough from the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And he was best friends with my sister's husband. And I was staying with my sister at the time. But I was a high school student, and I just fell head over heels in love with him when I saw him.
Mm.
And we began to date, and he went back to the Army and was discharged. And when he came back, we dated more and finally got married.
Oh, great. I understand as far as your participation in the civil rights movement, you went kicking and screaming, quote-unquote.
Yes, that's very true. Because we came from different backgrounds. I was from a family that was taught accommodating whatever our position was, because they were afraid that we were going to be killed, young black people, and they told us to stay in our place. Once I married Robert, and he came from a family where his grandmother told him he was as good as anybody and he didn't need to st- staying in it. Nobody could put a place for him.
Mm.
That was his philosophy. So staying in my place was not an option once I married Robert Williams.
So how did it, so did the movement of organizing, did it come out of the kissing trial, or how did that start, the to get people armed in Monroe?
Well, the armed self-defense idea came along after we had witnessed, so well, we had already organized the NAACP.
Right.
And all kinds of cases were coming to us,
okay,
about what was happening to black people. First of all, with our NAACP, we had presented a 10-point program to the city council asking them for equal pay for equal jobs, for veterans benefits to be paid equally to black veterans as to white veterans. And we had incurred the wrath of the local power structure.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, we had organized a crusader as a mimeographed newsletter to tell our side of the story as to what was going on in Monroe and in the South as well, and in the rising colonial, anti-colonial movements all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had already incurred the wrath of the people, local power structure, but the Klan had began also to determine that they were going to kill our movement. And so after several horrendous court battles, they really weren't battles, the NAACP, our group, took white racists to court, and they just threw them out. And then Robert said, well, look, we don't have any 14th Amendment protection here in North Carolina, so we're going to have to do something to protect ourselves. And so that's how the rifle club got started, and we got a charter from the National Rifle Association and organized our branch, and the women and the men,
right,
to learn how to use guns and how to legally have guns and protect our homes, ourselves, and our community.
Now, I have a completely off, really cockeyed question, and it's sort of like I'm moving backwards.
Yes.
But what was dating like between you and Robert F. Williams? Because, I mean, with my partner, you know, going to dates is like meeting you at the Black Studies Conference. So that's, oh, that's our understanding of dating. So what was it like for you?
Well, it wasn't easy for me to date Robert because he was older than I, and my parents didn't like him because they thought he was going to get me in trouble. And so we didn't have official dates like you know, would say dating.
Uh-huh.
But we would meet and talk, and we would be together with my sister and her friends.
Mm-hmm.
So that was our official dating.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just always wanted to know about that. Because, I mean, it seems like, you know, you're constantly organizing.
Yes.
And, you know,
well, at that point, Robert was still in the service.
Uh-huh.
And until he got back out of the service, where he was always in trouble for organizing, and we started dating and talking. And when we got married, that's when I really found out how radical he was. Because wherever he encountered racism,
mm-hmm,
he would not accept it and would organize around trying to bring it to light and protest what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that It was a while before I recognized that Robert was a different person. His dad said to me, as we were listening to the world news one night, he said, "You know, Robert thinks that he ought to be president of the United States." And Robert turned and said, "And why not? Mm-hmm. The president's a man, and I'm a man."
Right.
So I said, "Oh, my goodness." So, but that was early on,
right.
Early on in our marriage. And after then, I had no choice but to go along,
right.
And support him in what he was trying to do, and try to bring my own thinking into compliance with nobody can say where my place should be in society.
Right. So tell me, did you attend college? Did you attend college?
I attended college after I had been to the College of Hard Knocks.
Okay.
That means after I went to Cuba and China,
right,
and returned to the United States, I took college courses.
Okay.
But before then, I married Robert before I finished high school.
Oh.
So
okay.
I finished high school after we were married,
mm-hmm.
and attended high school both in North Carolina and in Detroit, where we had gone to try to get away from segregation and racism, and found out it wasn't something that was just regional, because in the Robert had been trained as a machinist,
mm-hmm.
and in the factories even during the war, they didn't want black machinists operating in those factories, and they would only give the machinists, they only gave machinists jobs after the manpower got so low that they needed everybody who was out there who knew anything.
Right.
So we had struggles both in North Carolina. We went to Michigan. We went to Chicago and different places, trying to make a better life for our family once we started our family. But everywhere we went, there was segregation or racism,
right,
that we became involved in fighting all over. Of course, we returned to the South, and that's where our main efforts were centered in the 60s. Late 50s and early 60s.
I noticed in the special of the four CDs that we're offering through WBAI for a pledge of $125, on one of the CDs, Robert F. Williams mentions the industrial institutional racism, the racism that he experienced in,
yes,
the plants and
yes,
what have you. And did you work with, were you ever involved with unions? I mean, I know unions were racially biased as well, but.
Yes, but in North Carolina, that was one of the states that they had, they had terrible fights against unions.
Okay.
And during the time that we were organizing in North Carolina, we had no contact with the union people per se. We got pledges of donations and pledges of money for guns once we organized our gun club from people who were union people.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
The, quote, rank and file.
Yes, unquote. Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed.
Now, I was wondering if, oh, goodness, I'm going back and forth. How was it raising your children? With the dynamics of your relationship?
Well, they were always in danger,
mm-hmm.
as we were.
Good.
Robert had been very close to one of our local Catholic priests, and the priest had indicated that he thought that Rob was going to become a priest until he met me.
Yeah.
And then, I went and became friends with the priest as well and began to take instructions for becoming Catholic. Mm-hmm. And I raised the boys in the Catholic Church.
Okay.
And our priest was very supportive of integration and helping to make things better in the community. And I worked with the church early on. They set up a daycare center and a clothing center for needy people. And I ran those things for a while in Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
But then our friend priest left and another priest came in, and we were involved in protesting and about not having swimming positions, pools in our community at that time.
Right.
And my priest told me that I was going against church rules to allow my children to be involved in civil rights struggles, and that they would take the children and take them to Charlotte, where there was a black pool where they could swim.
Right.
Well, and that I should not allow them to be involved. But the kids were excited about being involved in the movement, and I was too, and their father was,
right,
definitely. And so for a while there, I disagreed with what the church was saying, or what he was saying.
Right.
He went to take kids to the black pool in Charlotte, and the black people got scared because the whites were threatening to close the pool down because the white priest was in there integrating the pool, swimming with the kids. At one time, one little boy was beaten up in Monroe when he was downtown. They caught him down there. He was by himself, and they thought he was our son.
Mm-hmm.
And some racist element beat him up.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can imagine the kind of atmosphere that prevailed when our kids couldn't even go to a movie on Saturdays where it was a segregated movie. They had to go in the balcony in the first place.
Right.
But they had to be protected as well as we could in that society. So once our movement started and they were recognized as our children, they had a they couldn't do as a lot of the public things that other kids did for fear of the racists who were just doing whatever they could to try to run us out of town,
right,
and to stop our movement.
Now, they didn't go to Cuba with you, did they?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
They did.
Oh, okay. I wasn't clear on that one.
Yes.
Okay. Oh,
at 11 and 13,
oh, okay,
they went with us to Cuba, and they were there for 3 years, and then they went to China and were there for 5 years.
Okay.
And studied in both places.
Excellent.
Yes, they went with us. We left town together.
Okay.
And went to New York, where we thought that we were going to go to the north, and then, you know, everything would cool off, and then we would come back home. But once we got in the north, the FBI put out an all-points bulletin and had this framed-up case about kidnapping a couple in North Carolina.
Right.
And the all-points bulletin the FBI put out this poster, most wanted, one of the 10 most wanted people in the United States, criminals.
Now, that was a couple you were actually protecting.
Yes.
Yes.
But they put out this pamphlet, this poster mm-hmm. in post offices saying that Rob was armed and dangerous and traveling with his family. So once we got to New York, we had to split up as a family, and we didn't see each other again until I went to Cuba first,
mm-hmm.
and then the boys came after we were in Cuba.
Okay. Wow.
But a family in New York took them in and protected them and made sure that they were all right until they could be joined with us again, and people in Canada as well helped to take care of us and the boys individually until we could get together again in Cuba.
Excellent. Now, I was also curious about the persons in the black community who weren't, who were afraid.
Yes.
And I'm sure you encountered many folks like that. Well, actually, I'm curious, did you encounter many folks like that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Indeed, we did.
Yeah.
We did, as I was saying before.
Mm-hmm.
Our own family were afraid.
Right.
They were afraid, but nevertheless, my father always had a pearl-handled pistol under his pillow, which meant that he, you know, even though he told us that we should not give the white folks any reason to attack us,
mm-hmm.
he knew that if any white people ever, Klans people ever came to our house, he was going to protect our home.
Right, right.
So a lot of the professional people, teachers, doctors, lawyers, were people who depended on the system for their living,
mm-hmm.
maids even.
Mm.
Some of them in the homes of the people that, you know, they worked for, white people, they were afraid, but many of them would give us money as memberships in our organization, but we would put them in as anonymous members.
Uh-huh.
And many of them would give us donations to help in the struggle, but if they would see us on the street, they would cross over the other side so that the white folks wouldn't see that they were friendly with us. And a few of them who were being paid off by the man to be quiet or to deliver votes or whatever, were outspoken critics against us. And then we had some of those leaders as well.
Well, some things never change.
Never change.
Just so everyone knows, you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. My name's Joyce Jones, and this is Sugar in My Bowl. I'm having a conversation with Queen Mother Mabel Williams, who is the widow of Robert F. Williams, and we're having a discussion. And I'll be playing segments from a 4-CD premium that we're offering that has Robert F. Williams in presentation. They're like two sets in the 4-CD set. And one set was broadcast over KPFA in July of 1962, and July 4th, as a matter of fact, and one set, the other two CDs, were aired on WBAI in May 31st, 1962, and this is from the Pacifica Art Archives, and for a pledge of $125, you could have this set. And help WBAI stay on the air and Pacifica function. And, since they're from the archives, too, it won't be a hard time getting the premium out to you. Just so you know. It's 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Now, Queen Mother Williams.
Yes.
You know, I was asking you about the people who weren't as courageous as yourself. Tell me about Radio Free Dixie. I understand it was Robert F. Williams' idea, and he approached folks in Cuba?
Yes, indeed he did. Once we were in Cuba and we were safe, we continued to keep our contacts in the United States and Canada, and so we got almost daily news of what was going on in our movement. And at that time, you could get radio news from Cuba, in Cuba, from the United States as well. And we listened to Pacifica a lot.
Yeah.
And they would send us information through the mail. And Robert just felt like we need to do something. We can't just sit here. We're safe. Mm-hmm. And we're being treated wonderfully well. But we're safe and we're out of it, but our people are still struggling. And Robert understood the what was going on some of the international scenes and power struggles going on in the world. He called on 8 different leaders all over the world to speak out in defense of black people who were undergoing genocidal treatment in the south of the United States. That was a time when the little black girls were blown up in Sunday school,
right,
and all that was going on. Mm-hmm. And so he called on people to, those leaders to speak out. But in the meantime, he asked Fidel Castro if, he said, I would like to broadcast a program in support of my people. And we had always listened to shortwave radio, international news as well, when we were in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to hear radio, Europe Radio, USA, you know, all of those.
Uh-huh.
And he said, and I would like to broadcast, and he came up with the idea of Radio Free Dixie.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to have that radio program. So after much begging and going through channels, Fidel finally said, all right, Williams, you want this program, we're going to give it to you.
Uh-huh.
And the conditions were that Robert would be in charge. He would not have anybody telling him what to say or how to say it, et cetera, et cetera.
Sort of like Pacifica. He didn't have, like, a sponsor.
No. There was no sponsor.
Right.
No. The sponsor was Fidel Castro.
Uh-huh.
There were people who, even down there, some of the old communist leaders, you know, they believed in sticking to the hard line, working class thing, and they said, oh, no, you can't broadcast about black folks and what's happening. You'll split up the working class.
Mm.
But Robert fought that idea, and Fidel finally said, go ahead. You know about your struggle, and we're going to let you do what you can for your struggle, for your people. And so that's how Radio Free Dixie got started. So Robert would write all of his editorials that went on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the editing of the news items that I reported on the air. And we were successful in getting that out. So we felt like that was really a help, because it was bringing not only attention to our struggle or helping to support our struggle, to let people from even state to state understand what was going on in the South, because a lot of times the people in the North didn't know as much about what was going on as, you know, in the local communities.
Right.
So that's how Radio Free Dixie got started. But in the meantime, Chairman Mao Zedong answered the call that Robert put out for support of our struggle and made a statement in defense of the black people in their struggle against racial discrimination in the United States. So that's how we got our first invitation to China.
Okay. Actually, with back to Radio Free Dixie, I suspect that it was both your ideas to sort of incorporate culture, music and poetry, and I understand Amiri Baraka sent you things.
Oh, yes, of course. It was our idea. Robert, as I said, he had studied radio all over the world, you know, the radio's news programs and things.
Right.
And he said, if we have a radio program, we've got to have some good, hot music so that people will listen to the music. Much like BAI and much like Pacifica, you play the most beautiful music that we have that arouses people to, you know, their sense of responsibility and that has really good vibes for people, that people enjoy listening to. So he said definitely we have to have the best of jazz and protest music and folk music and whatever stimulates people to struggle and to want to have a better life.
Right.
So, yes, it was definitely his idea. And people all over sent us records. We got records from Canada, records from all over. And Mira Baraka and Robert had were both members, founding members of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee.
Oh.
And they had traveled together to Cuba right after the Cuban Revolution triumph.
Wow.
Cubans invited 10 black American writers and journalists to come to Cuba and see what they were doing to make things better.
Now, tell me a little bit, tell me something about that. What is it, Fair Play for Cuba?
Yeah, Fair Play for Cuba Committee.
Yeah.
It was Richard Gibson, and a group of other journalists and progressive Americans who got together and say, well, let us have a fair hearing and push for that in the United States with our government so that they will, you know, support what was going on in Cuba, because the government had been notorious in supporting Batista and the gangsters who ran the casinos and the prostitution and all of that in Cuba. And the Fair Play for Cuba Committee was made up of a group of intellectuals and freedom fighters and people who just wanted to see, writers, who just wanted to see our government recognize Cuba and the fact that it was moving progressively to help the people. But and that's how Robert got a lot of his nationwide U.S. exposure, by going around speaking about the Fair Play for Cuba Committee and also speaking about what was going on in Cuba, and at the same time speaking about our civil rights movement that was going on in North Carolina.
So he was able, Robert F. Williams and I guess yourself, were able to come and go from the country? Or you did it via the program?
At that time, was before the civil rights movement intensified and and got to the point where we could not just easily move back and forth. Could go, you know, at that time you didn't even need a passport to go to Cuba and Mexico and Canada. You just went. So it wasn't all that difficult for travel in the early days. That just happened after they started to boycott over here and all of that.
So, Queen Mother, could you tell me about, I have a question from my associate producer, yes. Hank Williams. could you tell me about the part of the role of women in the movement?
Well, you know, as mothers and wives of the officials who were in our branch of the NAACP, we were supporters and active members, and we worked side by side with our husbands to do whatever we had to do for our branch and our community. We were active in PTAs and whatever, and recruiting members for the NAACP. And when it got to the point that we had to defend our community, we were active members of our rifle club and teaching the children as well to utilize those arms with caution and safety, teaching all that in our communities, and just fighting side by side with our husbands in whatever we had to do. So we played an auxiliary role to our husbands, but we fought. We were there with them, side by side. Of course, we couldn't separate when the telephone was ringing all night long with threats
right.
to our lives. We couldn't separate ourselves from that.
Right.
You know, we had to be involved one way or the other.
So. And you also carried guns. It wasn't just the men.
That's right. That's right. We carried guns. And we were taught how to use those guns as well.
Right. Okay. Well, would you be interested in taking a couple of phone calls?
Yes, that's quite okay. All right.
If anyone has a question for Queen Mother Williams, you can call 212-209-2900. It's 212-209-2900. We're not going to take too many because I have to get to work. I haven't done my duty here with regard to raising funds.
Oh, yes.
So let's see what we got going on here. Hello, WBAI. You're on the air.
Hello. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening.
I've been listening to your description, and it is an amazing story. And actually, when you were talking, I actually did a little quick research about your husband, and it is an incredible, incredible story. But I would like to know, are you a bit, I'd like to know your opinion, since you actually lived it,
yes.
of China during the Cultural Revolution and Cuba during the Cuban Revolution. I don't believe those people were permitted to be private owners of gun rights as they do in the United States. And I find it incredible that in the end, you and your husband basically voted with your feet and incredibly, after everything that you've been through, chose to return to the United States.
Okay, well, thank you for that question.
Well, when we first went to Cuba, one of the first gifts that Fidel gave my husband was a Luger. He knew that Robert was a gun person, and he knew that there were possibly threats to us in Cuba as well as there were threats to us in the United States. At one time, we received a telegram. At that time, telegrams were just flying back and forth, you know, between countries. We received a telegram saying, next week, same time, same state, same place on Playa Beach, one of the beaches, saying, you know, indicating that somebody was coming, sending arms down there or something for Robert and trying to undermine our existence there in Cuba. And some other people put out rumors that Robert was traveling, not traveling in the best interest of black people, but was traveling in the best interest of the CIA. So they tried to even there say that we were, we had struggles going on even there. But Fidel said, if I know how any American got to Cuba, I know how Robert Williams got here, because he was instrumental in helping us to get there. So he knew how we got there, and he knew that the CIA didn't send us to down there to do any harm to Fidel Castro or any of the Cuban people. As far as why we their policies on guns, we didn't go down there with the idea of interfering in Cuba's affairs. We went down there as refugees and made it known to the Cuban government we were there as refugees, and whatever they could do to help us fight our battle, which was still in the United States. We never claimed Cuban citizenship. We never claimed Chinese citizenship. We did not take sides during the Cultural Revolution, as some Americans did, and British and other foreign people who were over there, and some were imprisoned for taking sides during the Cultural Revolution. I feel that I was so fortunate to be able to go to both those countries that were in the process of change, real basic change in their society. Cuba went through the change of declaring itself a socialist country. During that time, the Cold War was on. There were students who were there from Africa and South America. There were Russian technicians and all Eastern European technicians, and they all were attempting to win over the students on all sides. And just to see that country in the transition and the political activities that were going on a worldwide basis was a real education for us. And then moving on to China during the time of the Cultural Revolution, when the Chinese society was also in the throes of Cultural Revolution and moving forward, political movements that I was privileged to see, I think it was just worth all of the suffering that we went through to be able to see those kinds of transitions taking place. And knowing that no society remains the same, no society remains the same, and people are the ones who are going to make the difference in the society. And all of the time we were looking at ourselves and feeling at ourselves as Americans,
right,
not as Cubans or Chinese or Vietnamese or whatever, Russians, but not as ideologues, not as communists, because that was an ideology that we looked at. And my husband said, I don't believe that when one man, Karl Marx, wrote whatever he did, that there would never be any other people who would not come up with ideas that will continue to move society ahead. And that was borne out in China. Mao had brought the Chinese people out of the depths of poverty, where they had been picking up bodies on the streets from people starving to death, into a new society, but it was also developing into another society.
Okay, Queen Mother Williams, I hate to interrupt you, but I've been delinquent with something, and I have I have to take care of that. Actually, I want you to hear this. So
okay,
hold on for a sec.
You're tuned to WBAI, the station that tells our story and tells it like it is. This is Mabel Williams, widow of Robert F. Williams, Negroes with Guns, and you're listening to WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM.
And I mean every word of it.
All right. Just thought I'd share. That's what became of it.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, you're listening, as Queen Mother Williams had stated, you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. We're in the middle of a fun membership drive, and I'd like to thank Queen Mother Williams for the time that you've spent with us this evening. Is there one last question for me? Oh, wait a minute. I think we have one last question from someone on the line. Hello, WBAI. You're on the air.
Hi. Hello. Can I ask a question?
Please, quickly.
Okay, I'm on the air now?
You are indeed.
Okay, I just wanted to say what an incredible inspiration that Queen Mother Williams and her husband, Robert F. Williams, are to this day. And I thank you both for everything that you have done for oppressed people in the U.S. and everywhere in the world. And I was just, my question was about your politics, going to Cuba and China and being involved in the international political struggle also. How did your politics evolve or change? Did you at any point consider yourselves socialists, or was it revolutionary nationalism, or that's basically my question, and thank you so much.
Queen Mother Williams had just spoken about that.
Say that politics are still evolving, and we depend on the young people of this generation to continue that dialogue and to continue to develop that politics until we can all walk together in unity.
Well, thank you, Queen Mother Williams. That's a perfect way to end. And thank you for spending all this time with us.
And thank you, WBAI, and do by the record, do support
yes.
free speech in the United States of America.
Well, thank you very much, and you have a great evening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Wow, wasn't that great? Wasn't that just great? Queen Mother Williams, all that time we spent with her. Now you need to help me, because I was, trying to share as much Queen Mother Williams as I could, and I wasn't begging too much. But you need to call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Actually, before we do that, I'm gonna go to Robert F. Williams so you can hear a little bit more of what's in this package, this 4-CD set for a pledge of $125. Actually, for a membership of $25, you could say that you're a member. And you could have stock in this station. We don't have underwriting. That was a choice of Pacifica, of those responsible. But let's go to Robert F. Williams so you can hear what you're pledging for.
Call the governor's office, the governor of the state of North Carolina, the governor Terry Sanford. Well, Governor Terry Sanford was out. They got an opportunity to speak to his chief aide. And the chief aide, Hugh B. Cannon, was speaking to him, and he was trying to tell him about this violence and that there was no police protection there for Negroes, not for the Freedom Riders. So the governor's aide kept talking about Robert Williams, and he said that he was not calling about Robert Williams. He was calling about this fellow that was missing. He said that they were pacifists. They were nonviolent people, and they wanted police protection. And the governor's aide, Hugh Buchanan, asked him if he was really a pacifist, and he said yes. And he said, told him, so, well, if you're a pacifist, you better get the hell out of Monroe then. And so he said, because there's going to be plenty of appeal to him for police protection. And finally, Reverend Brooks gave up. He said, since you're talking about Robert Williams, so that he's right here, do you want to talk to him? The governor's aide said yes. Now, I had talked to him before, about 2 weeks before then. I had to ask police protection. And the governor had sent a representative, an Akatom representative. He's a Negro who handles the race affairs for the governor. He's supposed to be the governor's troubleshooter. And he had come and he had held a secret meeting with me to ask me what it would take to quieten things down and what I wanted, what I was trying to do. And then I gave him this 10-point program, and it shocked him. He said that was too much. The demands were too high, but he would take it up with the governor anyway. And he said that, well, he understood that I had been undergoing economic pressure and that this was wrong and it shouldn't be, and said that maybe I could get a job, maybe the state could help me if we just didn't start any trouble around there. So when I called the governor's office and told him about some of these attempts, his assistant, Hugh Buchanan, Hugh Buchanan told me on the telephone, he said, you mean to tell me that you're not dead yet? And I told him, no, that I wasn't dead, not yet, but when I died, a lot of people may die with me. And so he said, well, you may not be dead, but you're going to get killed. And I kept so telling him that we wanted protection, that we were trying to avoid bloodshed. He said, well, if you're trying to avoid bloodshed, you shouldn't be agitating. And so this night, this Friday night, when Reverend Paul Brooks was talking to him, and he said he wanted to talk to me, and when I started talking to him, I told him what had happened. He said, well, you're getting just what you deserve down there. He said, you've been asking for violence. Now you're getting it. So I told him that I wasn't appealing to him for myself. I was appealing to him for a pacifist. And I told him, I said that, and besides, that I'm not appealing to you for a Negro. This happens to be a white boy that's lost in the woods. He said, I don't give a damn who he is. He said that you've asked for violence, and now you're getting it. So you're getting just what you deserve. So I told him, I said, do you know one thing? I said, you are the most stupid idiot in the whole world. And he became very infuriated. He started raging on the telephone and told me to shut up. I told him that he may be the governor's assistant, but he couldn't tell me when to shut up. And he said, well, if you don't stop talking to me like that, I'll hang up. And so he finally hung the telephone up. But no protection came. Each time the Freedom Riders would get ready to go on a picket line, they would call the FBI in Charlotte asking for police protection. The FBI would say, well, we're on our way. But they would never be there when anything happened. So that Saturday, when they were picketing in town, and the taxi cabs that had been transporting them to the line, I started up to pick them up, and the local white people gathered up there, the racists, and they blocked the road. They wouldn't let the taxi cabs come in to pick them up. And one Freedom Rider the day before had been shot in the stomach with a high-powered air rifle. So they blocked the road. The cabs couldn't go in to pick them up. So it meant that the Freedom Riders had to walk to the colored community, which was about almost a mile, about three-quarters of a mile from where they were picketed. And these great throngs of people in mobs followed these people along the streets, and they were throwing objects at them, and some of the people had threatened to cut one of the Freedom Riders with an axe, cut her head off. And they came on into the colored community, and the colored people who were not participating in the picket line became very upset over the fact that this community had been invaded by these people who were chasing the Freedom Riders. And many of the colored people started stoning cars, and they started beating these white people who had invaded the community, these people who had been stoning the pickets. So, on a Sunday, then the Freedom Riders went to the local churches, local white churches, and they were insulted by the so-called Christian people for coming to the churches. At one church, the Episcopal Church, the door was closed in their faces, and they couldn't enter the church. And that evening, many white races started gathering in town. The chief of police and the sheriff's office had been all through the county that morning soliciting people to come to town to fight the Freedom Riders. And many people were coming out of the country. Many people had been rounded up, and an organization called the Minutemen had brought people in. And 5,000 or more white races gathered in town. Now, I had been called a few days before then by the Klan. The Klan had asked me if I was participating in the picket line, and I told them no, that I wasn't participating because I was not sworn to nonviolence, but these students were sworn to nonviolence, and that's why I was going to stay away. And the Klan said, well, they were glad to hear that I wouldn't be there because they had a special reception of 30-30 rifles for these students. And so this rioting took place. When these people, these over 5,000, had gathered in a square, they started attacking the Freedom Riders. And many of the police started disarming Negroes, and they were giving these arms to whites, the white mob. The white mob had already been armed, and they had come into town, and they were taking arms from Negroes, giving them to the white people. They were also holding Negroes. The police held Negroes while white people, white races, beat them. Now, some of the girls were as young as 13 and 14 years old, and they were beaten on the streets of Monroe. And some were beaten to the ground and left in pools of blood. They were Freedom Riders and local nonviolent students from Monroe who had joined them in this demonstration and this picket line. And the police became very, very vicious, that they became openly hostile. They took people to jail and refused to give them medical attention. The 2 days before, the city had sprayed these people who were picketing with insecticide. It sprayed along the area where they kept going around the area and spraying them with this insecticide, hoping to drive them away from the picket line. The city had also passed laws, city ordinances, saying that pickets must be 15 feet apart at all times. That they had to maintain this distance. They couldn't be too close or they couldn't be too far apart. And so the police, they started using the tactic of stopping the picket in front, and when the one behind started walk on, he would get him for passing too closely behind the other. And all these tactics were being initiated by the police. So on a Sunday, when the rioters started...
Listen, yeah, people. Listen to me, don't try to buy no home down in Washington, D.C., cause it's a bush war town. Ooh, it's a bush war town. I got the bush war blues, I'm gonna spread it all around. Me and my sweet wife and Miss Barnacle run all over that town. Everywhere we go to see what they would turn us down, Lord, and a bush for a town. Ooh, it's a bush for a town. I got the bush for blues, I'm gonna spread it all around. Some white folks in Washington, they know just how. Some of colored man a nickel just to see him by, Lord, and a bush for a town. Ooh, it's a bush for a town. white man say, I don't want no Negroes up there. He was a bush boy man. Woo, living in a bush boy town. I got a bush boy blues, I'm gonna bed in his all around. This is the home of the brave, the land of the free. I don't want to be mistreated by no bourgeoisie, Lord, in a bourgeois town. Ooh, it's a bourgeois town. I got a bourgeois blues, I'm gonna spread the news all
talking over Odetta singing right now, but I've got to get busy. I haven't raised a dime yet. You people need to call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. We heard from Robert F. Williams earlier, talking about freedom riders and their attempts to protect them, get protection for them. And it's from this 4-CD set. For a pledge of $125, you could have the words of Robert F. Williams. I don't know if you heard me when I mentioned earlier that bootleg copies of Radio Free Dixie used to play on KPFA and WBAI. And the Pacifica Archives have put together this 4-CD set. Brian Schaeser and those who work with him, I suspect, put this together, and as many things from the archives, they come from the Pacifica stations, WBAI being one, KPFA being the other, KPFA being the flagship in Berkeley. And if you call 212-209-2950 for a pledge of $125, this 4-CD set could be yours. And you can have a bit of history in your household, and you can hear the speeches and the presentation and the interviews and everything having to do with things that some people might say haven't really changed much to this day, but several things that have as a result of the fight of Robert F. Williams and Queen Mother Mabel Williams and the family. Because, as we learned, the children are fighting, too. That's right. Which is generally what happens in households, that the parents are actively involved in struggle and progression. I mean, progression in an effective way. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. We need many people to call. Because, as I said, not much is happening. If you're providing this program, you are listening to WBAI. My name's Joyce Jones, and this is Sugar in My Bowl. This is a Sugar in My Bowl music special that usually happens every third Monday of the month. And tonight we're focusing on Robert F. Williams. And earlier we had a discussion with Queen Mother Mabel Williams. And I was pretty much interrupted. We even had a couple of calls from you. And we could use your help. For a pledge of $25, you could be a member. You could also call 212-209-2950 and talk to the tally coordinators to find the persons in tally who are ready for your call. Two people are on the line. Hopefully, they're taking care of business, not just lonely. 212-209-2950, and you can join those people. We do have people in Tally who can take your calls. 212-209-2950. And if you enjoyed this evening's presentation in any way, you need to call 212-209-2950 to express your appreciation, not just for Sugar in My Bowl, but for WBAI and Pacifica, because this is, as Queen Mother Williams had stated, this is it. You know, Pacifica is one of the few places that that give you this information on the air, on the radio. And for it to continue, for WBAI and Pacifica to continue, we need your assistance, because you're who we depend upon. 212-209-2950 is 212-209-2950. And if there's anybody to thank, I'd be glad to thank them. But we need more people to call. And programmers have been charged with missions as we're on the air. We've been charged with goals to make. Ah, thank you, somebody. Thank you very much. Yes, thank you. 212-209-2950. And we have to make something of the time that we're doing on the air. We have to come, you know, and we need your help to do it. I'm going to be pledging something myself, because I need to do that. And I've been a member for quite some time, and I need to do that too. Just like, because I still listen. I listen to WBAI. And if you listen to WBAI as you are right now, you need to call 212-209-2950. If you dig Democracy Now!, if you dig Talk Back, if you dig, Liquid Sound Lounge, Cat Radio Cafe, Nonfiction. Nonfiction's one of my favorites, with Harry Allen. If you dig... Now, people, don't take offense if I don't mention your show. If you dig Back of the Book. If you dig... If you dig... how could I... It's like now I'm drawing a blank, and I have the host name. But that's not what, you necessarily dig. You dig the program that is being presented. 212-209-2950 is the call, the number to call. Yeah, that's right. 212-209-2950. Make your pledge. Show your support of this listener-supported experiment. It's 50 years, 50 years. And we need your help. Now more than ever, as most people, most institutions are needing help. We need help here. And let's see. Perhaps we should go back to Robert F. Williams. But we need you to call. We can't spend too much time with Robert F. Williams, because I have to keep asking you. I have to keep asking you to give. Call 212-209-2950. With your pledge of $25, you could be a member. And we need that support. We need your participation. We need you. Because there is no WBAI. Thank you, people who have shown their support. We need more. 212-209-2950. We need more people to call, because that's what we need. The more people who call, the happier we be. The happier we be, the happier Pacifica is, the happier people listening to Pacifica can be, because we won't have to do this too frequently, but we need to do it now, as we're doing right now. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. I've been trying to play music that was either featured in the DVD, Negroes with Guns, or just music that might have been played on Radio Free Dixie. And having these four CDs for a pledge of $125 you may not get the music. You may not get the special, music that was played on Radio Free Dixie, but you do get the content. You do get Robert F. Williams' voice. You do get this in your archives. You get this history. You know, this is just wrong. I have no business talking right now. Yes, in the background, I am talking over Miriam Makeba, and I'm not going to do that for a second. Please call 212-209-2950. You know, the more you call, the less I talk. Yeah. Yeah, I got to hit a little bit. But 212-209-2950 is the number to call to help WBAI Pacifica stay on the air. Yes, stay on the air. It's really tight these times, and we need help. We WBAI and we in Pacifica, you know, as other not-for-profits need assistance, we need assistance. We need it more because we don't have underwriting. You know, we have no one else. We get a little bit from the CPB, and it's mostly you. You are it. Actually, you are it. It's a little bit from the CPB and you. That's it. And the more you help us, the more can be done. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. I know people are probably leery about pledging for premiums, but I'm going to assure you, because this is from the Pacifica Archives, this is more... It's easier to get this one, for sure. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. There's a process. It's generally a 6 to 8 weeks process. We have to enter cards and things like that. But you'll be helping us. And you'll help us even more if you have a credit card, if we don't have to mail you an invoice or what have you. But if you need an invoice, we can do that. You can pay your pledge by MasterCard, Visa, American Express. Yeah, that even makes me stumble because I don't have one. It's like American Express. But those who do, please call 212-209-2950. Use it, and you'll be using it wisely. 212-209-2950. I'd like to thank the folks who did call. Gerald. 212-209-2950. And there are... actually, at this point, one of the volunteers in the back may be going home because he told me he would be leaving. Thank you for coming in. And I hope you truly understand my appreciation for your being here. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950 is the number to call to get a this 4-CD set for Robert F. Williams. As a matter of fact, I think I shall... Actually, I'm looking for my cheat sheet. Ah! I think I found it. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. I'm going to go back to Robert F. Williams because we do need to hear a little something. By the way, keep calling 212-209-2950 while we're listening to Robert F. Williams. Don't let it stop you. Should be motivation.
Attacked indiscriminately. This was Sunday. This was August the 27th in 61. Now, they fanned out all over town, and not only were pickets and freedom riders attacked, but Negroes coming from churches, coming from other places, Negroes coming from work or just coming along the streets were attacked. And many of these vicious people, these vicious thugs, were beginning to pile into the Negro community. They were massing in the town. They were massing for an attack against our community. So many Negroes were arrested that many of the people who had really had legitimate violations of legitimate charges against them were released from jail to make room for the Freedom Riders and the pickets. Many of the people who came out of jail reported to me that students were bleeding to death in jail without medical attention. They wouldn't give them any medical attention. So I called the chief of police and told him about these reports. I told him that these people had reported that students were not given medical attention and that their lives were in danger. I told him that I would give him just 30 minutes to get medical attention for them. That if they didn't get medical attention in 30 minutes, that we would march on the jail. And so the chief of police became very frightened. In about 15 minutes, one of the student leaders called from the hospital to let me know that they had been taken to the hospital and they were getting medical attention. And late in the afternoon, just before dark, just at the beginning of dark, white people started to drive by my house in the block where I lived. These people would come through real fast, and they would start shouting and screaming, and some would fire out of their cars and throw objects at people on the street. So many of the colored people started arming. They started coming out into the streets with their firearms. In the block where I live, they had about 300 people up and down the street, and people were exchanging guns and buying ammunition and forming guards for that night to defend the community against those people who were massing in town. So about the fourth or fifth car that passed along was a car with this couple in it who lived in Marshville, North Carolina. People who had had a slogan, a banner on their car that Saturday, the 26th of August, in town. And on that banner, they had a banner with a slogan that said, "Open season on coons." Well, this was referring to Negroes. I mean, that this was an open season, and this was killing time. Now, many people have questioned the fact of why a man and his wife, or why a woman, would be in a riot-torn community like that. Now, let's say they were lost. But the woman claims that the house that I lived in, the house that I was born in, that had been sold to my father by her father, and that she had once lived there. Now she says she was lost, that she didn't know where she was going. And it so happens that this is a dead-end street, and it's almost a mile from the highway that they would use to go to Marshville, where they lived, and that no highway runs through this community, and no person in that county could possibly get lost in there. A lot of people said that they just can't see how it was logical that this woman would be mixed up in this community. But people fail to realize that in the South, that many of the white races consider white women a form of insulation because of the old tradition that a Negro is supposed to be intimidated by a white woman, that a Negro is afraid to offend a white woman, that many times on Klan raids, white women are taken along, and that this is so that if anything develops a fight, well, it appears that the Negro attacks a woman instead of the man, and the man was her defender, her protector. So this is nothing new to people who have dealt with the Klan. Sometimes even children are brought along because the white racists know that if anything happens to the children or to the women that this can become a very emotional, rousing point to raise a great issue that will help to mobilize their people, and that this is nothing unusual, that this is very logical to those who know the nature of Klan raids and Klan attacks. So this woman was brought along.
Listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. My name's Joyce Jones. You're listening to Sugar in My Bowl. This is a Sugar in My Bowl music and then some special membership / fundraising. And I have a few people to thank. Yay! I'd like to thank people who are actually, they don't mind being thanked, so that's cool. I thank you. Edward Little Jr. in Passaic, New Jersey. Thank you very much, Mr. Little. And we have Nancy Stringham, who she's in Yonkers, New York. Thank you, Ms. Stringham. And we have... looky there. We have Hank Williams, the executive producer of this. Well, not executive. The associate, excuse me. The associate producer of Sugar in My Bowl. Thank you very much for calling. And we could use you. We could use your calls. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Someone had asked earlier who I was chatting with. Who did I have the conversation with? That was Queen Mother Mabel Williams. She's the widow of Robert F. Williams. They did work together. They, one, you know, they just the whole family, you know, her, Mr. Williams, two sons, everybody. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Show your support for Pacifica Radio. Hey, there's paper covering. Why is there paper covering? I can't see. Why can't I see? It's like I'm asking questions and things. They can't even hear me. You know, some people can't. Well, they can't hear me back there because the volume's low. Ah, okay. Thank you. I thought something really intense was going on. 212-209-2950. Call with your generous support. Yes, any support that you lend will be generous because that's the kind of support it is. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. I was playing before. Actually, let me say right now, I'm playing a variation from Max Roach, from the Max Roach Quartet at the Jazz Workshop. From Speak, Brother, Speak. Speak, Brother, Speak was released in October 1962. I was told that they did play Max Roach on the... on Radio Free Dixie, so I'm within the radio, my what I had planned to do as far as what music I played. 212-209-2950. Folks are back there waiting for you. They're waiting to hear your call, to take your pledge, to tell you the truth. I know you may want to chat. You know, you may feel lonely, and there are people back there near a phone. But their purpose, primarily, is to take your pledge. You can chat with them as you give them your pledge. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Yeah, I got to get something happening. Something more happening. Because, you know, it's just that kind of thing around, you know, we have to raise funds. It's that important. 212-209-2950. All the folks who said that you were going to listen... if everybody who said that they were going to listen pledged $25, that would be a beautiful thing. That would be such a beautiful thing. 212-209-2950. Because Pacifica WBAI need your support. And yeah, I tried to share a bit of a taste from the CD set, and also to try to have a regular program where I would talk to people who are really history makers. Most of the people that I try to talk to on Sugar in My Bowl have a history of, you know, years of history. They've been around. They've been doing things. Musically, jazz artists, jazz-inspired artists, and persons like Queen Mother Williams, the widow of Robert F. Williams, who is in this package, that this 4-CD set that is being offered. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. I'm going to share a little bit more. But I need to see the phone ringing. I need to, on the other end of that phone call, there be a pledge. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. If the number changes, I'll go back to Robert F. Williams. 212-209-2950. Those who aren't familiar, Robert F. Williams he was a member of the Monroe chapter of the NAACP. He was married to Queen Mother Mabel Williams, and they were active in the it's not the official name, but it's the Negroes. Well, he's the author of Negroes with Guns. And he and the Monroe North Carolina chapter of the NAACP, were active in getting members of Monroe to arm themselves, because they weren't getting protection from the folks who they were paying taxes to protect them. 212-209. Thank you, somebody. Thank you. Okay, like I said, I'm going to go to Robert F. Williams for a quick moment, because that's what I said I was going to do, and I don't lie. 212-209-2950. We need you to call while I go to Robert F. Williams. 212-209-2950 is the number to call.
Okay. He said he kicked her down the flight of steps because while she was working in the corridor, she made too much noise. She disturbed his sleep. So when we asked for an indictment of this man, the chief of police, the same chief of police who's there now, A.A. Mooney, refused to give this indictment. He didn't want to indict the man. And finally we had to threaten to take legal action and to bring in the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Then he relented and he placed this man under a $75 bond. Now although this woman was confined to bed for 2 weeks, and she had to go to the hospital, and she was x-rayed and sent to bed for 2 weeks. After this happened, during the trial, this man brought a Shaw, who was an engineer for the railroad, Seaboard Airline Railroad, failed to show up for his trial. And even though he didn't appear in court, he was acquitted. Now, on the same day, there was another woman, Mrs. Mary Ruth Reed. Now, Mrs. Reed was 8 months pregnant, and she was the victim of an attempted rape by a white man who came to her house and who drove her from her house and beat her. He caught her, at a distance which would be equivalent to about a city block away from the house, while she was trying to escape down on the main highway, and he knocked her to the ground and started beating her. Now, she had a 6-year-old boy who was running along at her side, and when this man started beating Mrs. Reed, this boy picked up a limb that had fallen from a tree, and he started striking this man in the head with his limb. And this is how his mother was able to escape. She went to her neighbor's house, and her neighbor called the police and started giving her aid. Now, the neighbor was a white woman who came to court with her. She came into court and testified that this woman had come to her house, she had seen this man chasing her, and that she had come to her house and she was very excited and hysterical, that she had lost her shoes, that her clothes had been torn from her. Now this required a lot of courage on the part of this white woman to testify in court. However, during the time of the trial, they had the defense attorney for this white man. The defense attorney said, Judge, Your Honor, and ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this man, you see this man, this is his wife. This woman, this white woman, is the pure flower of life. That she is one of God's lovely creatures, a pure flower. And said, do you think this man would have left this pure flower for that? And then it made it appear that the colored woman was actually on trial. So then the defense attorney ended up by saying, just a matter of whether or not you're going to believe this woman or this white man. So the man was acquitted. But just before he was acquitted, the defense attorney said that the man is, this judge, Your Honor, this man is not guilty of any crime, that he was just drinking and having a little fun. And this came out in the court, and despite this, that he was acquitted. So at that time, the women, which I had intervened in this case, because this woman, Mrs. Reed, Mary Ruth Reed, had a lot of brothers. Now, her brothers wanted to kill Lewis Medlin, the white man, and I persuaded them not to attack him. I said that this was a matter that would be handled legally, that we would collectively get a lawyer, and which we did. We brought a lawyer all the way from New York that didn't even get...
Well, if you want to find out what happened, you have to call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950 for a pledge of $125. This 4-CD set from the Pacifica Archives on Robert F. Williams could be yours. Robert F. Williams, it was involved in the NAACP in Monroe, North Carolina, and we spoke to his widow earlier, Queen Mother Mabel Williams, and yeah, so for a pledge of $125, you could find out what happened, or what had happened at that time in Monroe, North Carolina, and just with the goings-on of Robert F. Williams and Mabel Williams. And 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. I know it's late. Some people are probably on their way to bed if they haven't gone already. Before you turn over, call 212-209-2950. It's 212-209-2950. And yes, I'm hoping that I'm sounding extremely pitiful and that you would take pity and call 212-209-2950 and help WBAI/Pacifica Radio, because we do so need your assistance. You're it. You're our source. 212-209-2950. I really would like to thank everybody who called earlier and pledged their support during this program. You can continue to pledge your support if you're not doing it tonight. You can do it later, or you can do it tomorrow, but please do it. 212-209-2950. We need your help. We need your assistance of financial support. For a pledge of $25, you can be a member. And somebody did that earlier, because it can be done. 212-209-2950. You can do it too before you go to sleep, or before you hear the rebroadcast of this evening's news, which is coming up next. I'm going to take this couple of minutes to ask for your support one last time. 212-209-2950. My name's Joyce Jones. You have been listening to Sugar in My Bowl. Please, give us a call when you can, as soon as you can, because we need it now. 212-209-2950. Yes, I'm back. Yeah, it seemed like I was gone, but I'm back, because we're preparing for the rebroadcast of the evening news, and let's see, what am I going to put on while we wait for that? You could still call 212-209-2950, and let's listen to Coltrane. Let's do that, and then we'll hear a little something before the news. Stay tuned.
Free Puerto Rico. Six Puerto Rican activists calling for the independence of Puerto Rico participated in a civil disobedience in Washington, D.C. They are now facing 6 months in jail. their first court appearances on Tuesday, May 26. Join the Ad Hoc Committee for the Freedom of the Six for a support picket here in New York City. Help us denounce U.S. colonialism in Puerto Rico and stand in support of the Six. Join us Tuesday, May 26 at 5 p.m. at 26 Federal Plaza. For more information, call 718-601-4751. That's 718-601-4751.
Won't that freedom better take that freedom? Won't that freedom better take that freedom? Won't that freedom better take that freedom? Freedom.
Oh. You're tuned to WBAI, the station that tells our story and tells it like it is. This is Mabel Williams, widow of Robert F. Williams.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.